The Tablet Show, Episode 94, with guest Jim McKeith. Recorded live Friday, July 12th, 2013. From thetabletshow.com, it's The Tablet Show. Conversations about developing software for tablets and other mobile devices with your hosts Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell. In this episode, Carl and Richard talk to Jim McKeith about programming in Delphi to build tablet applications for iOS. This episode of The Tablet Show is sponsored by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And now, here are Carl and Richard.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to The Tablet Show. It's .NET Rocks for Tablets.
It is.
Richard's here, and I'm here. What's up, my friend?
I have been plunking away at the humanitarian toolbox a fair bit, actually. You know, for those who haven't heard us talk about this on the road trip and stuff, we've been working on a project essentially to build software for disaster relief, all in open source. And we're gearing up for a big two-day hackathon at that conference in Wisconsin Dells.
And it's not just us. Microsoft is, of course, behind it. And they have a whole division about community aid that is behind it.
Yeah, they call it corporate citizenship.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's becoming bigger and bigger things. So the hackathon itself is August 10th and 11th at that conference. So it's the weekend before the conference. If you're coming, come out to our hackathon. We'd love to see you there, and you can build some software, save the world.
Is that in Green Bay, Wisconsin?
That is in Wisconsin Dells.
Wisconsin Dells.
You'll be there.
Yeah, I'll be there.
We're also recording our 900th episode.
That's going to have to be fun.
And it's going to be a geek out.
Yep.
We're going to let the audience choose, but it'll be either barbecue, automated cars, or mining asteroids.
Sounds great. I can't wait.
It'll be fun.
Oh, life is so much more than programming, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's get started with Better Know Framework.
All right, buddy. What do you got?
As you know, Windows 8.1 is right around the corner.
Yeah. It released the preview at build. I've got it installed on a couple of machines, and apparently it's going to final in August, although it's been no official word.
And Visual Studio 2013 right on the heels of that. And if you have always thought about dabbling with Direct 3D and DirectX, you know, and all of that stuff, but just haven't found the time, I've got something for you.
What is it?
Go to tinyurl.com/direct3dsample. This is a 5-lesson tutorial from Microsoft that provides an introduction to the Direct 3D API, and which introduces the concepts and code used in many of the other DirectX samples. So this is like, if it's in C++, it requires Visual Studio 2013, it requires Windows 8.1. So if you really have been itching to just turn gears, try something new, you might want to take a look at this.
Wow, and it's for 8.1, so it's super new.
Super new. And so, like I said, it's a 5-lesson tutorial, so it's going to cover basic initialization of DirectX and Direct 3D using the Windows runtime, and creating meshes, implementing pixel and vertex shaders, rendering 3D geometry, and techniques for basic lighting and texturing. So this is cool stuff, and it's current. You know, it's hip, and it's, you get to install some new stuff. Perfect opportunity to start up a virtual machine and go to town.
And it's in C++.
Right, which is very cool. Kate Gregory will thank me for it.
A sample from Microsoft in C++. That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
That's exciting.
It's great.
Good find, buddy. Nice one.
Yeah, and you know what? We're all C-sharp programmers here, so you know, it's not going to be that foreign. And if you know, if you're itching for something new, this is your Saturday project. Just go have fun.
Yeah, C++ 11 is basically C++ with C-sharp added, right?
Yeah. It's very cool.
That's cool, man. Awesome.
All right. Know it, learn it, love it. Richard, who's talking to us?
Hey, I grabbed a comment off of show 83, and that's the one we did on the state of Windows 8 development at Codepalooza.
Yeah.
You remember that, or did the whiskey get to you?
No, I remembered it fine. Yeah.
And if, for all the folks who just listened to the whiskey show we published recently, a lot of that information came from our experiences in Louisville, yeah, touring around the bourbon distilleries.
Well, in your experiences in Scotland with the Scotch distilleries.
Oh, that's right. There is a big Scotch rant in there, isn't
45
there?
45 minutes worth, yeah. It's like, hey, are we ever going to get to bourbon? I got a country down here below you, you know? It's like, America, hello. All right.
Oh, but it was fun.
It was
very
fun.
Very fun.
Yeah.
This comment comes from Nick Brandstein, who said, love the show. I listened to it live at Codepalooza, and I meant to ask you at the time, but I forgot. So now he's written it as a comment instead and gets a mug out of the deal. Good one.
All right.
What do you think Microsoft can do to gain more traction with Windows 8 and Windows 8 Mobile, etc.? Personally, I don't think there's a whole lot they can do other than wait. They were a bit late to the party, and I think that will slowly gain more traction as people update their devices.
I've heard I heard a story on NPR today about the reorganization of Microsoft, and if it's successful, it will make Microsoft more agile. And in the broadest sense of the term, more ability to react to the market, which has really been their downplay. They've been surprised by the turns in the market many, many times. And a lot of it due to infighting and things like that. And hopefully this reorg will sort of dissipate that or lessen it. That's their hope.
Let me throw you another angle at that. So I watched the Nokia 1020 launch.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the questions was from a journalist in New York, because it was held in New York, who said, when are you guys going to deal with the fact that, and the AT&T CEO was there, and he said that AT&T won't sell your product, that when they know nothing about it, they don't want to sell it to me, I have to demand it. When are you going to fix that? And wow. Got a huge round of applause.
Wow.
And Stephen Elop was really diplomatic where he said, this is not an AT&T problem. This is a third ecosystem problem. And we do have to educate better and we have to get better positioning in the store. And we're going to work on all those things. Because I do think that's one of the biggest issues is when you walk into a retail outlet for cell phones today and say, hey, I'm thinking about a smartphone.
It's all Android.
It's all Android. You're exactly right.
They have
and they're not going to offer a Win 8 phone.
Yeah.
And that's we've got to get past that somehow. I don't know the answer. I just think that's a key piece of this.
It's an economic problem because the Android platform is so cheap to produce and that there's more markup for them. So they obviously have a built-in incentive. There isn't so much markup in iPhones and in Windows phones. So the answer is to either, you know, have Google charge for Android, which they're not about to do, or to, you know, to raise the price of iPhones and Windows phones. Specifically Windows phones, what we're talking about. And I don't think that's possible either. So that's really the problem.
Yep. It's going to take a while. I mean, it helps that 1020 is one of those things you look at, you go, wow, that's going to sell a lot of Win phones.
Right, right.
It's an amazing camera. So actually innovative hardware and so forth, there's a chance for that to happen there.
Hey, we can afford the phones. We just can't afford eBooks. Thanks, Apple. I'm just kidding.
I recommended David Brin's Existence to a friend of mine. He goes online, paperback's $9, Kindle book's $18,
yeah.
And the audiobook is $30.
Right.
It's Wait great. A second.
What's going on here?
All right, we're way off talking. Oh, Nick, thanks so much for your comment. The best kind of comment is one that completely derails us. So I'm sending out a Tablet Show mug to you. And if you'd like a Tablet Show mug, just write a comment on the website at thetabletshow.com.
And that brings us to our guest. Jim McKeith is the host of the podcast at Delphi.org. 20 years of development experience, also including Objective-C for iOS, Java for Android, and C# for Windows and Windows Phone 8. And he's spoken at conferences for these technologies. Jim holds a number of patents for various software and computer hardware technologies, including the slide and pattern unlock used on iOS and Android. He's a Delphi MVP, and starting July 15th, Jim works for Embarcadero Technologies as the lead developer evangelist. And there you go. Jim McKeith, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So this has come out after you have started your job at Embarcadero Technologies. So how do you like it so far?
So far, it's fabulous.
The time-shifting jokes never get old, do they, Richard?
No. I know.
So Delphi, what is the news that you want to bring to us with Delphi today?
So the news for Delphi today is they have their, with XE4, support for building iPhone and iPad applications from Delphi. So you're working in Delphi on your Windows PC or in a Windows virtual machine, and you can create a iPhone application that will run on any iOS, iPad, iPhone, etc.
That's awesome. That's big news.
It is big news. And then on the roadmap, and which is going to make it even bigger, is that they're going to have support for Android as well. And so the goal is that you can share code or even do a single code base between an iPhone and an iPad application. I'm sorry, an iPhone, iPad, and Android applications. And they're not running on some sort of virtual machine or abstraction layer. It's running, it's a native application. It's compiling directly to the ARM processor.
So you're doing sort of what Xamarin did with C#, but you're doing that with Delphi.
Yep.
Very cool.
So the big difference with compared to a lot of other tools is, first of all, that it is natively compiling to the ARM processor. But second of all, is they're using their own control library, or I guess we are now, since I now work for Embarcadero, but it's called FireMonkey. And FireMonkey is its own component library. And so you have, you're using their own designers built into Delphi. And then you can use, you can draw the same application and have it run and look the same on both iPhone and Android. And so, for me, it was your last show with Sean Wildermuth, mm-hmm. but it'd probably be a few episodes ago by now. He talked about how it used to be that everybody had to have this application looking specific to that platform. But now, Facebook being a good example of applications look the same on all platforms.
Yeah.
And so FireMonkey leans itself really well to that.
Wow, that's great. That's great news. And so what is there a story for Windows Phone and Windows Phone 8 with Delphi?
There isn't currently. If you take a step back and look at the larger Pascal ecosystem, you actually is. So Delphi is Object Pascal, but there are other Object Pascal implementations. Rim Object Software has a called Oxygen Compiler that they make compiles for .NET.
Uh-huh.
So it's fully compatible with C#. You've had Mark Hoffman on here before,
right?
Or at least on .NET Rocks.
Yep.
And you can use that to get to Windows Phone 8 as well.
Okay. Wow, all sorts of options.
Yep.
You know, we all know about Delphi, but maybe we need to back up a little here. For folks who've, you know, lived it solely in the Microsoft realms, should we do a little history lesson? I mean, that's Anders Halsberg's baby there.
Right.
It is. And I've been using Delphi for a long time, and I remember when C# first came out, looking at it and saying, hey, a lot of these features that were really innovative in C# look familiar coming from Delphi.
Yeah, I recognize that event handler interface.
Yeah, and Anders Halsberg, I can't remember if he's used the quote before, but standing on the shoulders of giants. And when people asked him about that, said, hey, this is a lot like Delphi. He said, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. We build on what's already been built.
And he stood on the shoulders of Lino Tadros many times.
Those are big shoulders.
I'm some big shoulders right there, boss.
Oh, no. Well, of course, most folks know the original Delphi, that's Borland. But then yes. Borland went away.
Yeah, Borland started out with Turbo Pascal. Anders Halsberg and Philippe Kahn started Borland many years ago with Turbo Pascal. And that evolved into Delphi in 1995 on Valentine's Day. It was released for Windows 3.1. So it was right before Windows 95 came out. Delphi was pretty ahead of its time at that point. It was this nice drag and drop, you know, double click on things. It had robust exception handling. And so they did the first big presentation. They did a divide by zero exception, and everybody was aghast that the whole program didn't just die on the spot because it was able to handle exceptions.
They were used to VB4, right? I think VB4 was the one that people jumped ship for Delphi. Or maybe it was even 3. Wasn't it 3? I can't remember.
No, 95, that was VB4.
Okay.
And that was when they split into 16 to 32-bit versions.
That's
and
right.
The OCX and the VBX. Like, they tore apart the ecosystem right when this new language landed.
Yeah. Goes back to what we were saying, you know, about being agile.
Yeah. Taking care of things.
And so, yeah, Delphi started out in 95. Delphi 1 had support for Windows 95, went from 16-bit to 32-bit, went through a number of iterations, and to where we are today. So, it's based on Turbo Pascal, which is Pascal. It's an object-oriented version of Pascal, so it's Object Pascal is the Delphi language.
Sure.
And so it went away for a while. Borland changed their name to be Enprise, and from my understanding as an outsider, which at this point I can really just speak as an outsider, but Delphi was generating a lot of money, and so Borland company started to diverge into other areas. And thought, well, you know what? We really need to rebrand ourselves for the enterprise instead of being a developer tools company. Mm. And so they changed their name to Enprise. And then after a few years, decided that didn't work. So then they went back to Borland. And then again, they started I guess I'm not sure what the thinking was, but for some reason they decided to sell off all their developer tools. And so that spun off into a subsidiary called CodeGear, which was then bought by Embarcadero Technologies. So Embarcadero Technologies is a longtime database tools company. They make some fabulous data modeling, database management tools. And so they bought Delphi, and so they have both database tools and developer tools, which kind of makes sense because Delphi has always had a very strong foundation in database application development.
Sure. I mean, it's one of those original CRUD app building tools, right? If you actually want to get stuff done, this made sense.
Yes. Yep. And then Borland kind of disappeared. They're still around, but I guess they got bought by Micro Focus or one of those micro people that buys up all the old dead companies and
turns them into something else.
They're around someplace. Micro Purpose? I don't remember who it was.
Well, and it's like, yeah, do you blame all that on Microsoft? I don't even know, you know, these days. It was a very challenging time and folks shuffled around. And there's nothing wrong with the language, though. I mean, Pascal's a great language. We learned it in high school.
It is.
So I'm interested in your podcast. So obviously it worked because now you're working as the lead developer evangelist for Embarcadero. Is that how they discovered you?
Not really. I've been, I spoke at Delphi conferences for quite a while. Actually, I ran a local Delphi users group and then moved away and kind of felt like, oh, I miss doing all this stuff. And so that's why I started the podcast.
So you've been in the community a long time.
Yeah. I wrote a book. There was a book written on .NET web services way back when .NET web services were brand new. And the author, Richard Hunthausen, contacted me and said, hey, would you write a chapter on consuming .NET web services on Linux with Kylix, which was a short-lived version of Delphi for Linux.
Wow. Okay. So you've been around a long time. And when did you start the podcast?
A few years ago. I don't remember. It's been...
Okay.
It's probably been 2 years... been more than that. Three years ago.
Well, a few years ago. That's great. And so how did the position at Embarcadero come about?
So I'd actually contacted Embarcadero quite a while ago. I was at a conference with David I, who's the chief developer evangelist, and said, I would love to come work for Embarcadero. And he said, well, we don't have any openings now, but we'll keep you in mind. And then Anders Olsen, who was the lead developer evangelist, actually got recruited away by another company to go make, you know, duffel bags full of money. And he left and they said, hey, we have an opening. And they gave me a buzz. And I said, yes.
Okay, very cool.
All right. I'm trying to get my head around exactly what FireMonkey is.
That is a good question. So Delphi, when it first came out, introduced what was called the VCL. And so the VCL was a thin wrapper around the native Windows controls. So in Windows, you have these, well, in the original Win32 or Win16 development environment, you had these visual controls that Windows provided for you, but at least most people I talked to thought they were a pain to work with. And so the idea behind Delphi is it kind of used the VCL to abstract that and make it easier to work with these native Windows controls. And so that's what they used for years with the VCL. So FireMonkey actually, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody else had developed a third-party framework for Delphi that used DirectX and OpenGL to draw user interfaces. And so you could then use this drag and drop and have user interfaces built with DirectX or OpenGL to create applications. And it was cross-platform. It would work with, I think it worked with Delphi and FreePascal, which is a open-source clone of Delphi.
I'm sorry, what was it called again?
It's called FreePascal, which is a clone might be a little generous. It's at one point was pretty on par with it, but Delphi probably is evolving faster. And either way I say this, I'm going to offend either somebody in the Delphi camp or somebody in the Open Pascal or FreePascal camp. But this old version, I can't remember what it was called, would work with both versions, worked on multiple platforms. So, Embarcadero bought or hired these developers to come work for them and develop FireMonkey. And so FireMonkey is its own component framework, widget framework that is drawn using hardware acceleration on whatever platform. It runs on Windows, Mac, and iOS, and will also run on Android. So it uses the native platform's hardware acceleration to draw two-dimensional, three-dimensional high definition retina, whatever you want to call it, user interfaces. So some people are like, oh, we can use this for games because it uses on Windows uses DirectX. And they're like, well, you can, but it's not designed for games. It's not a game development platform. So it's not optimized for that, but it is hardware accelerated. And so irregardless of how the platform treats its own native user interface controls, so if a button behaves different on one platform versus another, then that is completely abstracted away by FireMonkey, because FireMonkey is drawn by its own libraries the same on all platforms. And so it's always going to behave the same. But then they have a skinning functionality so that you can then skin it so that it will look native on each platform so that it doesn't look out of place, or you can skin them all to look the same on all platforms depending on your purposes.
Is it just for Delphi developers?
So it is. FireMonkey is for Delphi and also C++ builder developers.
Okay.
But the thing about FireMonkey, and I haven't used, I used the original Mono Touch and Mono for Android, but I know they've changed quite a bit, but the big difference in there is that FireMonkey is more like we're used to in Visual Studio with regular WinForms or WPF application development, in that you can, in the same IDE, you drag a button over, drop the button, double click on the button, write the code that's going to happen when that button gets clicked. You don't have to jump between tools and stuff like that. So it's for some Visual Studio developers might find it more like they're used to development. And I know they've made a lot of changes in that in the Mono products, Marion products. But so some Visual Studio developers might actually find themselves comfortable working in it as well.
Well, I was looking at HTML5 Builder and I was surprised at how, you know, Adobe kind of Visual Studio 2012, you know, blend-ish it is.
Yes.
It looks a lot like that.
It does. And it is, so it, you can use that one as well for building mobile applications. It uses PhoneGap, so you can build a iPhone and Android applications with that. But yeah, it's very, very blendish, kind of diverged. It originally actually looked very much like the Delphi IDE, but they diverged to a different market with that one.
This portion of the Tablet Show is brought to you by our good friends at Telerik. Hey, can you ever have too many free tools to complement your development skills? I didn't think so. So our friends at Telerik are giving you now more than 30 free products for application development, automated testing, agile project management, and content management. And we're talking free. Not a trial, not a demo, but free, complete products supported by a community of over 440,000 developers at Telerik forums. From free ASP.NET Ajax, ASP.NET MVC, and Silverlight controls, to the free ORM solution and automated testing framework, to free agile management tools and content management systems, all of these and more are available to you for immediate download at telerik.com/freestuff. Most of the free products can be used for commercial purposes and give you access to supplemental support resources such as documentation and forms. Go to telerik.com/freestuff now and take full advantage of the available free of charge products. And don't forget to thank them for supporting the Tablet Show.
I mean, the way you're describing FireMonkey, it reminds me more of like the WinForm designer, that it's the drag and drop, build your form, write your code behind model, which I think largely .NET developers have gone away from. But when you think about a tablet app where you just aren't getting that complex, it doesn't seem like a bad thing at all.
Right. Yeah. And you can... you can implement your code either behind the button click event, or you can implement it in another code file and then call that so that you've completely detached it from the user interface. But yeah, it's great for like tablet apps, you know, typically aren't that complex. So it's great for exactly that situation.
What about getting access to the specific functionality of the tablet, the camera, the GPS, you know, attitude control, accelerometers, that sort of thing?
So there are components with FireMonkey that you can drop on. They're called non-visual components that would then give you access to those things, or there are libraries that expose those things. So you can easily get access to a camera, accelerometer, etc. Anything that's not exposed through the FireMonkey or other frameworks or the libraries built into Delphi, you can go straight into the API calls from Delphi and call those directly. So it does not limit you. It makes some things really easy, but then everything else is still available to you.
Okay. I mean, at this point, it's just Windows and Mac OS, but it's also iOS and Android.
Yep. Yeah. You can make an application now and then set multiple build targets. And so that same application can build for Windows, can build for iPad, and can build for Mac, and run exactly the same on all three platforms. Now, most likely, you're going to want to have a different interface on those different platforms. You can do that, different user interface. But if you wanted to, you could build one that would then run on all three platforms exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Later on, when Android comes out, you can also then target Android with that same application.
And when you build different UIs, are you still staying in a common code base and doing sort of a if Android, if iOS, or do you want to have a separate build for each platform?
So you can do some things with a common code base. There's a few different ways you can handle it. Because the user interface is created visually, there's not a way to have the code that defines the user interface say, if Android put this, if iOS put this. But you could, in your code, say, if I'm on Android, display this button. If I'm on iPhone, put this button over here, or whatever. You can have that in your code, but it's not in the declarative nature of the user interface. So, for example, in XAML, you have that flexibility where you can have a little bit more flexibility in the way you declare your user interface. That's not the way FireMonkey works, but you could certainly have your code say, create a button and put it on the form if I'm on this platform, or vice versa.
So there isn't a XAML equivalent in FireMonkey, a sort of a markup?
It's not like XAML. There is a text representation of it, mm-hmm. but it's XAML is really a really nice expressive user interface declaration language. Mm. FireMonkey doesn't have that, but it does have a text equivalent. So you can edit that, but there's no logic could put in there. It's just a text representation of the user interface.
Got it.
There is one of the things that's great about XAML is the data bindings. And that's mm-hmm. something that is supported in FireMonkey. They call it live bindings, where you can data bind anything to anything. So that's very similar to the way XAML does the data bindings.
And it's just called live bindings, just built into FireMonkey?
Yep, it's built into FireMonkey, so you can bind, you could have a slider control that could change the position of a button, so you can just bind those two properties together if you wanted to, or you could bind any kind of data that you have in your application to use the user interface.
So how do we bring data into the application?
So the application supports MySQL, which is supported on all those different platforms, and then also supports the Interbase database. It's called Interbase to Go, and there's two flavors of that. There's a free light version and then a slightly more robust commercial version of Interbase. So you can use either of those databases for data stored on your local application, mm-hmm. or you can use the DataSnap, which is a multi-tier database app access layer that will do let you build a REST middle tier that can expose your, big Oracle database or Microsoft SQL Server database to your client over the internet.
And DataSnap isn't just a C++ thing?
Nope. DataSnap is for both Delphi and C++ Builder.
Okay.
And there's a number of other... That's one thing about Delphi is it's been around for a long time and there is a very robust third-party components ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of other third-party ecosystem component suites and libraries that will do the same functionality as DataSnap. So if you don't like... What's one thing, Delphi is very good about having a lot of stuff in the box, but if you don't like what's in the box for whatever reason, you can always swap it out for something else. There's right. a huge library out there of different suites.
What about calling to things like web services or OData?
I'm trying to think if there's an OData-specific library for Delphi. I think there is, but I'm not positive. But for calling into web services, you can, Delphi built in the box has the Indie component suite, which is a HTTP, gives you the ability to call HTTP, connections, make HTTP connections. And also there are, JSON and XML handlers. And there is also a JSON deserializer that will deserialize JSON into local objects for you.
Nice.
So That's built in. DataSnap includes REST as well, so you can use DataSnap. If you're connecting to a DataSnap service, which is REST, then you can use a DataSnap client.
There's a somebody posted an example of consuming an OData service in Delphi XE with a Netflix OData service. It, you know, it's really just XML, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the real question is, you know, what do you, how do you make anything out of that XML?
Yeah, how do you bind it up, or like I said, deserialize it to an object, something like that.
Right. REM objects has something too.
Yes, REM objects does have, I was going to mention that, they have some libraries around that. Actually, I used to work for REM objects, so I'm very familiar with theirs. But I believe, I know that Delphi has the JSON deserializer. I don't know if they have an object. I should know this, and I will know this when the podcast comes out, but I don't know if there's a XML to object deserialization system. There is you can actually create objects. You can point at an XML document and it'll create an object representation of that XML that you can then deserialize that XML into.
Awesome.
Interesting. We keep thinking about Delphi as being old, but just because you stopped paying attention to it doesn't mean it didn't keep moving forward and utilizing all the current technologies out there. It seems like it's moved into the internet world just fine.
Yeah, it has. And there's, it's interesting because, a lot of people haven't paid attention to it, but it continues to move forward. There's been a new version of Delphi pretty much every year since 1995. So, and each new version has added some new features. It's got a unit testing built into it now. It's got all sorts of stuff. It's very, very familiar. It's not the Pascal that Nicholas Worth originally made.
Right, right.
Not your father's Pascal.
Yeah.
I think it's your granddad's Pascal. But not going to be mean about this because clearly it's moved on. But you touch on an important point there, Jim, which is it's not just about writing the software. It's about maintaining it. What about the debugging story and the source control story and, you know, those sorts of pieces?
So it comes with SVN, source control built into Delphi. So Subversion. One thing that's really neat about Delphi is every time you save your file, it actually makes a local revision history of your file. And you could then do a comparison between this save and the last previous save or however many revisions you want to keep locally, and then compare from there into Subversion history as well. So that's a really cool feature that I haven't seen anywhere else, that you have this built-in history locally, even if you're not making a check-in right away.
Huh.
It doesn't have Git support built in, but there are third parties that have made Git support that are built on top of that same framework, as well as probably Mercurial and other source control systems. But the debugging, the way that works for building an iOS application is you run this thing called PA Server on your Mac. And so PA Server provides a network connection to Delphi on your Windows. And so Windows can be in a virtual machine, or it can be on another machine in your local network. Or if you're going across the internet and maybe using a service like Mac and Cloud that provides you with a hosted Mac, you can provide it the IP address and it just connects all the way across the internet. So however you want to connect to it, PA Server connects to Delphi, or Delphi connects to PA Server. And then when you build in Delphi on your Windows, it ships that binary over to the Mac to finish. There's some code signing that has to be done on the Mac side.
Right.
Fires it up in the emulator or fires it up on actual hardware. And then you have a full debugging experience at that point. So you can set breakpoints, do inspection, the whole nine yards, exactly like you'd expect for any other debugging environment out there.
And like I said, it does need a Mac. So the development environment for an iPad is going to involve probably an iPad and a Mac and your normal development environment.
Yes. Now, with Android, everybody's excited because they don't have to have a special, you know, Google box to develop that. Although, realistically, you should have an Android device to build it with, but I guess you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, but a Nexus 4 is a couple of $100 and it's like the reference phone. Use it.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think I just saw the Nexus 7 is on sale at Staples for under $200.
Wow.
So, yeah, more and more, it's, you know, why wouldn't we own this stuff? It's just not that hard. I'm realizing I'm going to end up with one of everything anyway.
Yep. Well, and if you're developing for it, yeah, you should have it. And even if you're not developing for it, it's interesting looking at the way things are done on other platforms. You know, especially in an, as a programmer, looking at other languages, it's like, oh, that's interesting. And it influences, even if that feature is not in your language, whatever, you know, if you're looking at Ruby,
yep,
that can influence the way you develop for the better in whatever language you're using.
It's cool. And it definitely, you know, we talk about the polyglot effect. The more that you expose yourself to these other environments, the better off you are. I actually got myself a Nexus 4 and tried to live with Android for a few weeks just to see how it was and missed my WinPhone terribly.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think it was during WWDC, Apple put up a slide saying, talking about user satisfaction. And it showed that iOS had a higher user satisfaction than Android did.
Yeah.
But Windows Phone actually had a higher satisfaction than Apple did, which I thought was quite interesting.
Hmm. That is very interesting, isn't it? Well, and you get back to, you know, I don't think it's the question is it satisfaction with the phone or is it satisfaction with the carrier? Because that's the real thing I find with the Android right. phones is the carriers have done terrible things to those phones.
Unspeakable yes. things.
Well, like uninstalling the App Store.
Yeah. You didn't need that.
You won't be putting any apps on this phone.
Yeah. Well, and because Android is the, I guess, the commodity OS, if you were, for mobile devices now, mm-hmm. you have this huge variety. So you can have your flagship Android devices like the Galaxy or the Nexuses.
Yep.
But then you have your other ones, low-end ones that are... That's where I think you get a lot of the lower satisfaction. Although my Galaxy S3, I was on Verizon and they locked the bootloader. So I had to unlock the bootloader before I could load my own custom ROMs on it and stuff that. So,
He's an Android geek.
Yeah. One of them.
It's a funny thing about Android is most Android folks are just regular consumers that were sold an Android phone. But then there's this collection of elite Android hackers that are running custom ROMs and making very unique phones. Some of the coolest phones I've ever seen were customized Android phones.
Yeah. Well, and that, even if you're not doing custom ROMs on Android, it has this incredible openness of being able to install your own text messaging client, your own dialer, your own whatever. You could just install the app from the App Store. And when it pops up, say, use this one by default, and it switches over and you never know the old one was there anymore.
And when you take control of that yourself, you get to build a phone you really like. But the carriers have been using that capability for evil.
Yes. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, I feel like the default set for the default configuration of WinPhone seems to be the nicest configuration, but I'm totally biased. I flatly admit that. And we're supposed to be talking about tablets. You know, Jim, have you got a few tablet apps out in the field now? Are you doing development for enterprise in this space?
I don't have any out in the field, really, but I've done a lot of just... I've always been an explorer, and I love exploring things and discovering how they work. So, done a lot of tablet development, nothing but that's out in production, really, at this point.
Right. So I think that's the biggest thing here, is just looking at what's the nicest way to build an app onto a tablet. This whole... What about the installation experience? Like, do I have to go through the App Store to get onto the iPad, or is there a sideload option? How do you do that?
So, on the iPad, the majority way is through the App Store. They do have an enterprise development option that you can use in on the iPad mm-hmm. to sideload your own apps inside your company. There's also, it's called TestFlight. That's a service, and I believe it's free, that you can use for beta testing. And so the way it works is you actually have to contact each of your beta testers and get their unique ID for their iPad. And then you use that in your build process, and then your app can be distributed through TestFlight to your build testers without going through the App Store.
Right, but it's a limited set. You can't use this for deployment for your whole organization.
Yeah, it's a limited set. I think there is a cap on the number of people you can hit. I'm not sure what that cap is. I know some people try to use this as a way to circumvent the enterprise distribution or App Store distribution. And I know that they frown upon that. And I don't know if they catch them and shut them down or not. But
interesting. But clearly, if you start with TestFlight, it'll get you on the path to doing the enterprise distribution if you want to go there.
Yeah, the enterprise distribution is they charge a premium from Apple to do that.
Right. Well, and I wonder if the Android path is just going to be easier. When, you know, if I'm working in an enterprise where I'm going to distribute the tablets, let me distribute the one that's the easy, that's inexpensive, reliable, and easy to deploy onto. And I think that's going to end up being Android.
I mean, hopefully,
at some point, Windows on the tablet will make sense because their side load story is terrifying too.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like Android, just because it's so open, it's just not going to be a problem.
You know, there was some stories back before Android about the military using iOS devices in the field because of the, you know, I mean, it's a, if you think about it, this is an incredibly powerful computer.
Well, what's great about that is that the NSA knows where they are at all times and what they're saying. That's true. So why wouldn't the military use it? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail that.
I wondered about what their, if they had special dispensation from Apple to be able to sideload this apps on there. Maybe they're using the enterprise distribution or whatever. But I think today the Android's becoming a much more appealing for that because it is so easy to sideload applications onto there.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I remember also there was a big story about there was a company in China, I think it was, that you could, that would take iPhones, they'd buy the unlocked iPhones and, or buy them without contract and then remove the cameras from them because some people could not have a iPhone, a smartphone with a camera at their employment for whatever reason.
Oh, right.
Restricted areas.
Right.
And I believe Apple shut them down. I'm not sure what mechanism they used to prevent that from happening, but the I had an iPhone for years. I still have an iPad. Actually, I still have my iPhone. It's over in the corner, but they're very nice, streamlined user experience, very integrated, but the closeness of the platform kind of restricts the flexibility. I had a Windows Phone 7 device actually as well, and it was actually quite nice. My only complaint was there wasn't as many
apps
available.
Well, have you seen the Lumia 920 or the 1020 is coming out now? How many megapixels is it? 41?
41 megapixels.
Good Lord.
Because more megapixels, good.
You can zoom in video 6 times and still be in native resolution.
Still be at 720p.
Yeah.
You know, I had a fairly nice old camera, and my iPhone camera, I remember looking and realizing in ideal conditions, took a better photo than my pretty nice digital camera from a few years prior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And now with this next generation of camera phones coming out, and I think they're more camera phones than they are phone cameras, they're low light, they have the crazy zooms. Like, yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal camera.
Yeah.
Well, and to tie this back into tablets, one thing I always thought was weird is that they put the back-facing camera on a tablet. It's like, who's going to use a tablet to take a photo?
But oh, have you seen them? They're out there, man. Go to any tourist destination and you see them taking pictures with their iPads.
Yep. And the other place I see it a lot is people in a lecture, right? And so they're used on their tablet taking notes, and there's something interesting up on the screen, pop their tablet up, take the picture. Boom, they got the picture.
I think, you know, people like the way they look holding a tablet, taking a video, you know, because it sort of looks like you're holding a screen. It's a screen, but it's a camera. You're sort of like a little Hollywood there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. I guess I could see that.
Well, Jim, what's next for you? I know that this new job with Embarcadero is going to have you busy, but what's on the horizon?
So with Embarcadero, one of the big responsibilities I'm going to have is working with their MVP program, which is their field evangelist, I guess you could call them, which is the individual Delphi users that are blogging or podcasting or whatever about Delphi. So that's exciting. I'm excited to be working with the MVPs. I was previously on the other side of that. So that was a lot of fun. But I'm just excited to be working with Embarcadero and doing stuff with them. I think it's exciting time to be working with Delphi because with the Android support coming out here in the next few months. So,
Well, that's great. Jim, thanks for spending this time with us.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll talk to you next time on The Tablet Show. It's not too much, but it means a lot. Just try.